I'm sure you've understood what was, and appreciated which part was just read out. It was the text from the fortune cookies, the kind that you find when you go to have a Chinese meal. Just to give you a sense of the spirited wit of this novel, so I'd like to sketch out the content. Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez is the narrator, and I'm looking out into the audience because I see some people looking a little bit lost. Is it audible? So, we have Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez, the narrator. Carretera is his nickname, which means motorway in German, and it means highway in English. Ah, you see, our cooperation is working well here. So, highway, motorway, because we will be whizzing at high speed through literature from Plato to Foucault. And the author pops up as well, just as we speed along. Now, Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez, given his very poor background, has really bad teeth. Samuel Pickwick is a figure of reference for him. He grew rich and was able to buy new dentures. And Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez wants to be able to do that too. He becomes an auctioneer, the best auctioneer in the world. And he grows prosperous. And he then dumps his wife and their child, and the son is called Ratzinger, who at the time was the head of the Vatican Congregation of Belief. Now, there's a dubious option that crops up, and he comes across, allegedly, the dentures of Marilyn Monroe. He buys it and starts to work with it. Now, Bernd Scherer, in his words of introduction, touched upon the question of authenticity, and he called into question the whole process whereby it came into being. So I'd like to hear from Laia Giuffresa how exactly this book came into being, what exactly happened. And once you've talked about that, then I will ask you, is that really true?
Yes, I will say the truth, I'll speak the truth, but I think that Valeria would have liked me to say that it was a very good thing to wonder whether this is fiction or not. But yes, it's all the truth. And in Mexico, there is a production of Mexican juices. And there is a very big production site. And there is a gallery also for art products and artifacts. And at the production site, they have an art gallery, which is maybe the most well-known international art gallery there is in Mexico, with very, very expensive works, but it is situated in Ecatepec, which is an industrial site, and it has a very high population density, and it's a little bit like no man's land. It's a place where there is no public space whatever. It is really the very place where capitalism has spread and where there are workers living. So Valeria was invited to write a fiction text, a novel for the catalog of an exhibition that they were preparing. That was an exhibition which was wondering about the relationship between the very factory and the art gallery, which are really parallel worlds, but which were living together or not. I mean, that was the very question they were dealing with. So she was invited, Valeria, and she said, well, I'm not really interested in writing a novel myself. I would like to collaborate with the workers. So she was inspired by the so-called tobacco readers, which is something that happens in Cuba in the tobacco factories, in the cigarette factories. There always was somebody reading to the workers. So this is something that she wanted to take back to the serialized novel dating back to the 19th century. And the art gallery liked the project, so she sent a first installment. And the workers heard the first installment, or rather they read it, because there was a printed version which was distributed amongst the workers. And then there was a reading group. And the workers came together, they gathered, they read, they would discuss, and then they would send Valeria an audio version with their replies and with their responses to the readings and to the installments. And then she would pass on to writing the next installment. So she had no idea of where the story was going. She was really putting it together as she was moving along.
So it was a serialized novel in a sense. She wrote one part, one episode, and then she continued, and then it went on?
Exactly. So this was a text that was published on the internet when the whole process was finished. And first there was a version of the catalog, and then she wanted to put together a novel. And she really edited her work and thought about the installment as if they were part of one novel. So this is something that we will have to go into the details into, because there's such a lot of imagery in the novel and so much fiction, so many references. And for example, what we've just heard, the beginning of the novel, was there from the very first day that she started writing the novel. So this person called Highway was there from the very start, and then there are other persons or personalities that came together. Well, we will speak about the various versions of the novel. Let's start with reality, or with the reality part of it. There's proof that this process had really taken part as such. So an excerpt of the discussion of workers from the factory is what you've brought us, and let's listen to what that sounds like.
Aquí en la parte de los jugos, ¿o dónde trabajas tú?
Sí, acá en la planta donde hacen estos.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Está, es un área pequeñita y pues hay muchas máquinas ahí pegadas.
Se super calienta todo.
No, se calienta muchísimo.
Aquí al revés en la galería, no sé si ya entraron hace
sí,
como...
Sí, pues está bien fresco.
Sí, está bien fresco siempre. Pero al revés, cuando hace mucho frío, nosotros tenemos que traer así triple calcetines.
No, ¿cómo crees?
Porque si no, y más con este tipo de tenis que son muy delgaditos, entonces si el frío te cala y te hace que te duelen los huesos, casi casi.
Ahora qué feo.
Sí, es muy feo.
Sí, es como concurso.
Está medio impráctico, ¿verdad?
Están cómodos.
¿Cómo los ven los cojincitos estos?
Está chido.
So what did we just hear there? Well, I wanted to bring this fragment of just 1 minute, just this recording, which it was 2 hours long, because this is a moment in which nobody has yet spoken about the reading. They're just coming together in the art gallery, the curator, and they're waiting for the workers, for the readers to come in. So there's this very short part where a worker from the factory who works in a very, very small room is commenting, and there's no ventilation there at all. So the curator is saying, well, but we have a very strong AC there at the production site, and he says we have to put on 3 pairs of socks because we're freezing to death. But then there's this worker there, which is strange. I mean, they're laughing. It's an absolutely friendly conversation, but it's absolutely, it's very little understanding for the workers' conditions there in the production site, because the workers, as this is a food factory, that they're checked every day for their nails and their hair and their health conditions. So the curator would like to participate. He would like to also complain about the situation in the production site, and that he complains about different things. Of course, he complains about having needed 20 minutes to get into the factory instead of complaining about the terrible conditions of temperature, for example. So, Valeria Luiselli goes back to literary history. You just talked about the Cuban tobacco readers, and you said how they were sort of the role model and how Samuel Pickwick, a figure from Charles Dickens' first novel, The Pickwick Papers, is the role model for Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez. And Charles Dickens' novels also were written just like this novel of Valeria Luiselli. So that's really the role model for her novel. And there were installments. And this revolutionized the market of literature. There were groups of readers back then who gathered money to buy Charles Dickens' next installments for the serialized novel. So there's a formula for the novel's production, which is also named in the prologue. And it could be called Dickens plus MP3. So we've already listened to that. Balzac and JPEG. We will come to Balzac and JPEG in a minute. So we've learned it's a work in progress. Antje Kunstmann, could you tell something about the way of working progress that you've published?
Well, we translated from the Mexican original version, and the translation was finished when Valeria told us that the American edition had been entirely reworked. And she actually wanted us to publish that version. So I told Dagmar Plutz, and Dagmar Plutz took a look at it and said, I have to retranslate the entire thing if we take that edition as our basis. And then you think, well, two translations, why, what for? That doesn't make terribly much sense. So then the question really is, well, what should you do? If we take the reworked version, the American edition, after all, is one that's different. Because after all, the journalists and the lawyers who review the book will ask us, well, why is your version not the same as the original version? Did the translator leave something out? Did the translator change it themselves? Because of course they'll compare it with the original, not with the English translation. So it was an interesting writing process. But as a publisher, I said, no, we won't do that. We're going to stick to a translation of the original. And Dagmar Plutz said, well, there are a few things we could perhaps incorporate. And she then discussed those with Valeria, and they're now incorporated into the German version. So there's a few changes, but essentially it's translated from the original Spanish. Now, you're familiar with both, aren't you? So what are the differences in the American version and the original version?
Well, essentially it's the same story, but the English version is a lot more essayistic. It's clearer in theoretic intentions. The Spanish version comes from the... Did I just hear erotic there? No, that's a misunderstanding. No. Well, so the basic question for the writing process was, how are objects valued through stories? Which is a very traditional question, and we always wonder that question in contemporary art. So for her, it was her way to come close to contemporary art and to the work of the gallery. So what will happen with all these ready-made and with these art forms? But she doesn't say it like this in the text, because she's working with the workers in the production site in the juice factory. So there's many epigraphs of linguistic origin, and there's a lot of talk about the value of language. So there's this moment when some guys take away work of art, and they say, okay, we'll sell it on. And then the other says, no, it's not possible, because we will not get the right value out of this selling process. So we said, already said, there's a lot of name dropping in the novel, and there's a lot of more visible reference in the English version than in the Spanish one. So the English version is a bit more of a novel and essay. Okay. This is understandable, because as you said, the workers were involved in the process and they were co-authors. So with regard to the value, this gallery, this whole gallery, is financed from the revenues of the juice factory. So that's from the revenues from the workers' work. So what's the value of a work of art mirrored by the very activity of the persons appearing in the book, for example, Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez. So Sabine Scholl, what was it you most liked about the novels? So you put it on the short list here for this prize. Well, there were quite a number of things that made me do this. First of all, the first reading experience. I very much appreciated this change of perspective and the different narrative forms used in the novel. Very sensual, I thought it was. And this theoretical background, we actually tend to forget about it, even though the author is able to make so many cross-references in literary history and to history, almost in an infinite mode. Yes, and then there are some graphical illustrations from the Spanish version. And just as playful as the text is, just as playful are these graphics, literary expressions. Yes, and this is precisely what all authors do. There's these family references, and this creates a legitimate ground to be counting the story, to be narrating the story this way, and to be treating the literary material like this. So many authors work like this. But with her, it's also this sensual element she incorporates in her way of narration. And then the big surprise that comes in the end when there's these real-life inspirations. So persons that have collaborated in the process and whose voices are being rendered visible. So there was this collaboration that has pushed the process forward. Yes, and this is something that we're only told in the last sentences of the novel, only in the epilogue. I didn't want to believe it. I Googled them all, the curators and all these other persons involved, and I thought, well, no matter whether this is true or not, if it was invented, it's a very good invention. Yes. And this is something that the Spanish version doesn't refer to. For example, that this is something that the German version took from the Spanish version and not from the English version, the epilogue. For example, the Spanish version does not explain this process. Well, and I'm interested in knowing what happened after. At some point, the novel was finished and it was then published. So was there another feedback from the workers about the finished book? Well, I know that finally there was no feedback on the novel, but on the catalog text, this catalog text that formed part of the art exhibition at the gallery and that was presented at the gallery. So Valeria was there, and she personally talked to the workers, and that this was how the whole circle came to close. Yes, and let's hope that all the workers would have got a signed version of the novel with loads of space to sign themselves. Yes, that's the question, actually. Did they get that? Well, that would have been great. I don't know whether the workers were made available a copy of the novel. I don't know whether there was any interaction between them. We would have to ask them.
So let's write down that question. We've got this literary family tree here. We've talked about the spiritedness, the wittiness of the book, how compelling it is. It's sometimes expressed almost in aphorisms. Ugliness strengthens your character, for example. On Sunday, I don't do business and I don't do nonsense either, and that's all kinds of fun. And he talks all the time about his uncles as well, like Marcelo Sanchez Proust, James Sanchez Joyce, Peter Sanchez Dostoevsky. Now, of course, this is a game. But what exactly is happening with literary history and with the names of the authors? If they become neighbors, family members, if they're ripped out of their original context?
Well, I think that was really Valeria's question that she was asking herself. What happens when we give somebody a different name? What happens when you take these sacred names out of their literary context? And what happens when you put them into a juice factory? So she says that the following happened. If you imagine a literary figure as a piece of fabric, then the person which gets to know the author views this name as if it was a very heavy weight and a very heavy burden. And on the other hand, there are names, very, very well-known names from literature. But then there are Mexican writers, young Mexican writers, less well-known. So maybe many international readers will not know who we are referring to. So this is a field that we haven't really touched on. Yes.
Now, of course, you could view the whole thing as a game, as an experiment. What happens if you do that? That's an interesting question, but I think there's also an existential level. That existential backdrop is touched upon in a brief passage where it says the book is set in a world where the people who live are actually, in many ways, worth less than the bus journey off to Acapulco. Is that the sort of background that you would envisage to this novel as well?
Well, I think that this goes hand in hand, these two things. We speak a lot about whether Valeria is really a Mexican writer or not, because we always label her a Mexican writer, but she spent most of her life outside of Mexico. But still, I get the impression that his or her Spanish style is very Mexican, very typical, and she wouldn't really get to the same depth of irony in other languages. So that's something profoundly Mexican. So for me, her style has to do with humor also, which is something very typical for Mexican writers as well. So more than being an essential dimension, there's a social dimension. There's a real wondering of what's going on in this place. We haven't shown the photos of Ecatepec, but this is a part of the Mexican state where right now many women have been killed, many feminicides. I don't know whether you've heard about this here in Germany, but this really is a place where workers are scared as they walk the streets. And sometimes you hear stories like Maria cannot come to work because her husband cannot accompany her to the factory. He can't take her there. And you can't walk the streets of Ecatepec by yourself without protection. So there is a real social dimension of this collaboration. You don't really sense this as you read the book. But that's the interesting thing, the different sorts of readings that you can have in the different languages. And really, the book is different in every language. Yes, that's true. So seeing these photos, and there are also photos in the very book, but here the drastic element of it comes to my mind, for example, on pictures like this one. And in that moment, this interplay and these different sides of the experiment becomes so evident to me. So the workers contribute to a book which is situated in the context of world literature, and they influence in that process, which is something that gives them more value in both directions. The workers get an access to this world of literature, and the world of literature is moving to this place, to this desolated place. So Gustavo Sanchez Sanchez is somebody who lives there. Yes, true. I mean, I'm getting the feeling that in Mexico, if you know more about the Mexican background, about the history and the terrible situation there is in the present and this impunity, that there's a new dimension opening up to one as we try to read the significance of the novel. And not everybody will know every author, this is true. So the more writers you're familiar with, the more you see the cross-references. To me, I spent 5 years in Chicago in a Mexican neighborhood, so I happen to have dealt a lot with Mexican culture. A lot of Mexican culture happened on my doorstep. Many Mexican workers would live in that neighborhood, so I automatically had to do with this, with the Mexican culture. And I did see many sort of weak spots in the social texture. Just like in every novel, it depends on the very background of readers. It depends on their cultural understanding, the extent to which they're able to understand the book or read the book. So the great thing is to see so many layers, so many possibilities. So it is rather logical to me that for every translation, for every version, there shall be a slightly different version. So what was it that you meant? Well, yes, of course we needed to come to that. Yes, because this would have been the point where it would really have gripped me. There's a caption and a quote by Los Tigres del Norte, and they are a group. They're a Mexican group, one of the most famous groups I discovered back then when I was dealing with the Mexican-American literature. So this band with the average Mexican is very popular because it's a band talking about the daily sufferings of the people and about their problems. They are the leaders of the people, as they say there. So people speak a lot about the power of drug trafficking, about brutality, about the many families that feel and are torn apart because their sons are taken by the drug cartels or are recruited by them. And for example, if you take a look at this picture, at this photo, and it only says jefe, boss, and you think of the song, The Boss of the Bosses, El Jefe de los Jefes, and that's the quote Valeria draws. To me, this was a connection between the photos with the bad taste culture you find there, which at the same time is immensely popular. Wherever this band is on stage, whatever bad the musical quality may be, they fulfill a social function. So that's a quote of Los Tigres del Norte. So as soon as the chick is born, it wants to fight with the big chicken. So is this also yours? Yes, this is my tape. It's from my collection. I even went to a festival, and I even went to see those bands. And that's where I saw just how popular they are, everybody dancing, all ages.
Das Buch hatte dann ein weiteres.
There's another chapter to the life of the book, in a sense. There's a very interesting and perhaps confusing trace. You might think it's grappling with rhetoric. There's hyperbole, there's ellipses and all the rest of it. Paraboli, and these are actually mathematical curves, are they not? Now, how does that mathematical level with the parabolic method, etc., come into the book?
I think that initially it was a way of organizing the chapters, I think, because Valeria had some installments to deliver, and she was working on the concept of eccentricity. So this is the permanent wondering, questioning herself about modern and contemporary art. So the Mexican culture giving an eccentric person more value, for example. But eccentricity also exists as a mathematic parameter in order to measure a curve's meeting point with an axis. So that's the ellipse, the ellipses, the parabola, etc. But at the same time, the rhetorical figures are also called that. And the methods that Highway uses to auction his objects are also congruent with this. So in Valeria's novel, there's an allegory between the auctioneer and the writer, somebody who escapes to give objects value through language. So on one hand, we've got the mathematical structuring of the book to structure each chapter, because each chapter is one installment. And then on the other hand, there's the literary reference for the ones who are not familiar with the Mexican writers. And for everybody else, there is this way of selling things onto other people, this auctioneering level, to the people who have no money and to people to which these objects mean a different thing. Yes, that's true. And one thing that comes to my mind is that we're talking about curves. So, and the figures in the book are also edgy with curves. And this is a book dealing with nonlinear narration. It's a nonlinear fiction. So there's another level of significance on top of that. Yes, and the figure is called Highway, which might be curvy and straight at the same time. So before we give this text an interpretation on so many levels, we can also say that it's just a great reading. It's a pleasant reading experience. And maybe this gets lost as we do another level of interpretation and of questioning. Really, it's a wild, anarchic text, which causes one pleasure in the reading experience, because she tells us so many different stories that are interwoven, that stop, and she takes them back up at a certain point. It's not linear, but it's a wild book. There's this wild pleasure of narrating, and this figure of the auctioneer is the world's best auctioneer, because anything he sells with a story attached to it. So this is the value he attributes to the objects. And this is what Valeria Luiselli does as well. She tells us these little stories. And she also says that anything people told her from their daily lives became to be part of the stories and of the novel. You always think that this novel will be big and so many literary references, but quite the contrary is the case with her. She has such a vivid fantasy, and if you can relate to that, you can have her take you with her. She's got a great language, really. We really have to state this. That's absolutely extraordinary, apart from the very from the very many literary cross references. And as this novel is compared to Orlando, the first book, and the Nazi literature in the U.S. And if we were to speak about what he would have thought in these times, then he would have watched Big Brother, because he wouldn't have wanted to see his own work interpreted this way. And he left it to the people to interpret it. So he left it to the people to say what if this had been invented or not. Okay, and you said it was sensual. And I said just how crazy this text is. But you being the publisher, after having had so much headache with this book, you should definitely advertise the reading pleasure this novel procures the reader. So how about the author? Would she too say that once she starts discussing the different layers, would she say, no, I'll go and watch Big Brother or something else on TV? Would she do that too, just like Bolano? I think both things she would do. On one hand, Valeria has this theory base in her daily work. She does have that. We've been working together for so many years. We've read each other's texts. And there's something that's always been striking me, because I don't usually think about the theories. And she does do that. She does think of the theory of it all. And I think it's because of that that this novel is working so well on a narrative level. That's because she has an absolute freedom to mix the registers. For example, she can go from the Tigres del Norte to Plato and to Ecatepec. So this permanent mix of registers, of literary registers and of topics, that's the real richness of her writings. But yes, there is a theoretic base to what she writes. And of course, it's not a philosophical essay. It's not a PhD work, but there is a theoretic and a philosophical background work to it. That's true. And let's come back to Bolaño, because he didn't want to interpret his own works, because others would do it for him. But what he said back then, and this is why it's so fascinating, because back then it was the first Big Brother shows, and everybody was going like, what's happening there? So that's the stories Mr. Bolaño would take into other novels he's written. And that's really the link to Valeria Luiselli's work, because what she does is taking the stories that the workers brought to her, even though she's done something else with them in the end. But that's where the circle closes again, doesn't it? Because Bolaño wouldn't write for a university audience. He also would choose the installments of the serialized novel in order to turn to The Simple Man. So the serialized magazines and works he presented were also read to illiterates. And Mr. Dickens even would not read on days where the workers were off. He did it on days where the workers were able to attend. And to me, the great pleasure of it is, and that's where the two levels meet, of the reading pleasure and the philosophical works, is that the book gives you surprises all the time. And we can really agree on that. It does surprise us with regard to the stories, with regard to the literary ideas, surprising in the literary forms. The Fortune Cookie chapter is incredible. I mean, you can't believe it. Up to the concluding chapter with the photos.
Up until that point, I would have been entirely on the game level, and then along come the photos, and the question is, how do the photos function? How does it all fit together?
Well, in the first moment, the photos were a way from Valeria to avoid this space that the workers would inhabit. So it's Google Maps photos in part, and she's exploring the neighborhood of Ecatepec to understand what this place is all about, really, because she's not familiar with it. And then there's photos like this one, for example, that's one of the exhibits for the art exhibition for which she's writing the text. So that's screenshots of a video made for this exhibition. So in the beginning, it would just be materials for her. And then she started incorporating the novel because there's this figure. Well, Ecatepec is a place a tourist would never go to. So they decide to plan a touristic walk through Ecatepec and to speak about the question of the auctioneering of the objects. So this is what happens, and they go walking Ecatepec. And these are the bridges she builds in her free interpretation, but that's very rich because she's mixing the levels and layers all the time. There's a philosophic quote with mixing that up with other forms. Well, yes.
Yes, but after you've read all of this dramatic narrative beforehand, where you simply cannot believe your eyes, you see the images, and all of a sudden you think, Hang on a minute, I read about all of that. It is all true. After all, there's the photos, aren't there? And so that turns the screw one further twist. Yes, but at the same time, if you look at the Google Map shots, it's all in the digital realm. It's not something that's physically real. You don't have the researcher going along and doing research. It's something which is mediated. Once again, it's a kind of illusion once again. But what's the amazing sentence which you see underneath this image? Well, yes, that is rather entertaining, isn't it? And it's not. It says, this is not a pipe, ceci n'est pas un pipe. Interesting allusion there.
Yes, and when you get to the part with the photos, then you're aware of what Ecatepec is like, and the workers' stories, which were pushing the novel. For example, there's a place with sort of a place of erotic gathering possibilities next to an arms shop, and this is what you understand when you see the photos. This is a writer who didn't just make up a story. She's a writer who really did research on the place where her novel is situated. And it was really a collaboration. She wasn't expecting this to happen. And now we can see that it really was a collaboration in every way.
Once again, the close cooperation and so on. But let's take a look at this photo of the two dinosaurs. The narrator's ashes were buried, or rather scattered, at the feet of these dinosaurs on the artificial grass at his personal wish. And it says, when you go, you will take nothing with you. That's the caption for that image. We've taken a great deal with us, though, from this discussion. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get a copy of the book, you can get it at the table with the books, which I'm sure you've all spotted already. And I look forward to seeing you all again in a moment for the next session.